Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the Andrew Schultz episode. He was highly recommended by James Jean. He's an awesome artist, and what I enjoyed about his episode was just his skateboarding history, his Bay Area knowledge as far as skateboarding and graffiti and art. Just all around good episode. So I hope you enjoy, and thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Weeby Show.
Hi, Stan.
We have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome artist Andrew Schultz.
I love the piano.
Thanks for coming, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we're talking right when you came in. I enjoy watching your skateboarding footage on your Instagram. I get hyped when I saw two clips. You did an impossible on the first one that I saw, and a pretty big pop shove it on your latest.
Thanks.
Yeah, so
I might have even done that pop shove it for you, man.
That's my
I heard that you like that trick. I skated on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I thought, could I do a big ass pop shove it
that
maybe Steve
that
would like?
Yeah, you really, dude. You really popped it. Are you Goofy?
I am Goofy.
Yeah, Goofy. Yeah.
What's your wheelbase?
52.
No, wheelbase.
Oh, what is that?
Distance between your trucks. Do you know that
one? Oh, no, I don't know that.
That's a crucial one. Yeah. I want to say it's probably 14 inches. I think it's 14 inches.
Yeah. It's a popsicle stick.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, I have indies.
7 3/4?
7.75, yep. 7.75.
Nice.
I actually, when I first started...
I always ask that to skateboarders. What's your wheelbase?
Whatever the shop has.
Because that one's crazy.
That's
a crazy one because you know what? Like the one thing I've learned with skateboarding is the wheelbase is actually the most important measurement in your skateboard.
Why is that?
Because that's the distance that your trucks are apart and your wheels. So in fact, like a lot of times for me, I've always been like worried about my skateboard, like, oh, if I switch something up too much, I'm not going to be able to do my tricks. And that one is actually the most important one. You can get like a weird skateboard, but if your wheelbase is on point, like 9 times out of 10,
it's gonna work
your
out.
Tricks are going to still work.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you, is it better, the wider the better, or like how does that work?
No, I think, I mean, 14 inches is what I've always skated, and that looks like what you're probably skating.
Yeah.
And recently I got thrown like a little monkey wrench in my program and I bought a board from a skate shop and it was 14.25.
Oh.
So it was just a little off from 14 and it really messed with me.
Oh, yeah. It did.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back. So where are you originally from, Andrew?
Originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Wow.
Yeah. Far from where we're sitting right now.
And then how did you get involved with skateboarding and then art?
I started skateboarding in around 1985, but before that I was into BMX.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
You used to do the jumps and stuff?
More like freestyle.
Freestyle okay.
stuff. So, and I've actually heard this story quite typically from, you know, I'm 43 years old, and I don't know how old you are. You're 40?
I'm around there, too.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Like right around,
Yeah, so we're around the same generation.
Yeah.
And recently I've heard this a lot. Like, a lot of skateboarders that I admire, they were like, oh, I was skating, I was riding a BMX, and then I got into freestyling, and then this magazine came out called Freestyling. And then they always would sprinkle in a little skateboarding. And, you know, Spike Jonze was actually working for Freestylin magazine, which is something
I'm a fan of his.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But I recently learned that, like, or not recently, but not too long ago, it all kind of clicked together because he was working for that magazine, shooting and skateboarding was being put in that magazine. At the time, riding a bike, I was like, suddenly, like, oh, the skateboarding thing looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what got me into skateboarding.
That makes, you know, the way you worded it right there makes perfect sense in my world, because I'm from a smaller town in San Diego, Poway Rancho Bernardo.
Right.
And in the plaza, this mall that we used to go to, this outside mall, they had a bike store. But in the bike store back in those days, they, you know, you'd have your bikes, but then there's a small section where they had like skateboards.
Right.
So that's how I was introduced, at least in my world. I'm like, yeah, oh, for this sure. is cool. There may be have been like 8 decks or something. I mean, a very small little area, but it was introduced to me that way.
Yeah, where I grew up, it was similar. Mm-hmm. We had a place called Rad Sports, mm-hmm. and it was a lot of BMX stuff, which mm-hmm. I was into, and then it was also skateboarding. And that shop's actually still there today.
That's crazy.
But now it's called Phase 2.
Wow.
And that was owned by the family of Paul Zitzer. I don't know if...
That sounds familiar.
He's a Tampa guy who was pro for Birdhouse for many years, vert skater, but also a really good street skater.
That's what's up.
And still friends with him to this day.
But you're still friends with him?
Yeah, and he works a lot with Street League. He's a commentator on Street League and also still works with all the guys at the skate park at Tampa
and all that
stuff.
So, man, that's a trip that, like, because you're taking it way back. What are your thoughts on today's skateboarding, like how crazy kids are nowadays?
I mean,
it's insane.
It's pretty insane.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, I would like to say I like super pay attention to it, but like I look at Thrasher Mag,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you know, it's awesome to see Tyshawn Jonze win Skater of the Year.
Yeah, that kid's amazing. Yeah,
and you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's really cool to watch for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think skateboarding's gone through a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, like, at this point, I'm really happy to be, like,
you're still
doing it.
You're still on your board.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. Sure. That's amazing. I don't know if this, I don't know if you feel the same way, but for me, it seems like kids are way more advanced. Like, it took me years to learn a kickflip. Like, it took me a long time.
Yeah. Same here.
And going back to the shove it, I learned the pop shove it before even, like, I could kind of ollie, but I one day I just went like that, and then it did the shove it movement. I go, whoa, that's weird. And I just kind of started working on that first. But would you agree that kids are, like, picking it up a lot?
Yeah,
faster?
I think though it's just like how you come up, you know, because like, and you hear this all the time when you hear skateboarders or even guys that are in their 30s now that would be like kids that came up way after us, like they came up watching like a Zero video, whereas I came up watching Future Primitive, you know,
right, or the VHS.
So it's
tape.
Like,
yeah,
and I think that's like the most kind of like a really cool thing for me as a skateboarder is that, like, you know, I came up like literally where ollieing up a curb was like unfathomable. So it's like doing
a
boneless or like street plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I learned how to ollie. Then I was like kick flipping. And then
180s.
So, yeah. And then like finally someday I was like, you know, doing stuff on Hubba Hideout. So it's like,
yeah,
it's crazy to go from like that full spectrum of like, from almost nothing to like something. So like for me, when I came up, like the idea of a 360 kickflip was like absolutely insane. But now a kid comes up and they're like, oh, you Smith grind a 15 stair handrail. That's just what kids do. So, you know, I think it's just that mental and psychological thing.
Yeah, we didn't have YouTube. Like, I mean, these kids could look up how to, like, how to do whatever trick, laser flip. They could just look it up on YouTube.
For sure, for sure.
So, like, how did you, did you get sponsored when you were younger and then, like?
Yeah. Okay. I rode for some companies for many years. My first sponsor was actually Beer City Skateboards.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Beer City Skateboards, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, and, you know, there were some really good riders. You know, there's a really good group of guys that, you know, comes out of, like my era of Milwaukee, mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. guy who's still pro, who's pro for Creature right now, named Al Pardonen, mm-hmm. still a good friend of mine. And, you know, Sam Hitz, there's a lot of good guys that came out of Milwaukee skating.
Yeah.
So we had a crew, and a lot of them, one of the first board companies that came out of Milwaukee was called Beer City Skateboards.
I like that name.
And they did it was a funny story. They like did blank boards. They were like the pioneer of the blank board for like really cheap.
And but this is like put in a sticker on it or something.
Well, you could, but like in the industry, this was like a big thing because like they were selling these blank boards for like $30 or $25 in the shop, but like the boards from like companies with graphics, with pros and all this stuff, those boards 40, were like 50 yeah, or 50, whatever. Yeah, yeah. So they were like undercutting everybody. Mm-hmm. It was like a kind of a big deal at the time, but that was like my first sponsor. And then soon after that, I actually got hooked up with like ATM and
I
New
remember
School.
The ATM, yeah.
And so I rode for them for many years. And then for years after that, after I moved out of Milwaukee in around 97, I moved to San Francisco. And, wow. You know, that was to, you know, because I wanted to go there to skateboard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's also a graffiti mecca at the time, but also to go to school.
That's what's up. So do you go to art school?
Yeah, I did go to art school in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I moved there and we were doing a lot of that, or I was doing a lot of that stuff mm-hmm. at the time. But also, you know, at the time I moved there and I met a lot of people mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and got in the scene there with skating and graffiti and stuff like that.
Would you say that you got introduced to graffiti through skateboarding?
No, actually not.
Okay, okay.
I got into graffiti.
Yeah, how did you, I'm just curious, how did you get into
graffiti?
I got into graffiti through
the movies Breakin' and Beat Street and stuff like that. And
explain
so,
to the viewers, because they might not know what that is, but those were monumental movies from the 80s, right?
They were monumental movies from the 80s, and they were,
Electric Boogaloo.
Kinda, well, that was Breakin' 2.
Okay, it was Breakin' 2.
Beats,
who's the one with Turbo? I remember this Turbo character.
That's Breakin'.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Turbo and Ozone.
Sick. Yeah. Yeah, those guys are sick. Yeah. So, yeah, yeah, go
but,
back to
you
that.
You know, Beats. I think Beat Street was more like of a quintessential movie because it took place in New York City and it had to do with, like, sort of based on what was, like, sort of really happening at the time. I mean, I guess I wouldn't say that... Breakin' wasn't talking about the West Coast, but I feel like Beat Street was more like a realistic portrayal.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I was in like the second or third grade at the time.
Yeah, I think
and
I
so,
was too,
like,
yeah.
I got into Breakin', and then, like, my main reference to, like, the art was to, like, you know, do the cardboard that, you know, me and my brother were breakdancing on and stuff. That was kind of my introduction to graffiti. And then I feel
like the tagging on the boom boxes and stuff.
Or? Yeah, stuff like that. And then just like, you know, in the movie, they were painting trains and doing all that stuff.
So you took notice of that as a kid.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh.
But I think, too, like, so for art wise, like I came up like, you know, my father was really into drawing. And so he would doodle a lot. And then when me and my brother were really young,
Is he older or younger?
I have a brother that's 2 years older than me.
Okay.
And we both kind of got into comic books at a very early age. And then, so like we had babysitters that my parents got us babysitters that were super into comic books too.
That's cool.
And they would draw comic books. So I
while they're babysitting you?
Yeah. They were babysitting us and they were super into comics. And so they would be drawing comics and I'd be like, oh, that's cool.
Sick, dude.
And I would copy them.
Yeah.
But then what got me into graffiti basically a few years after that was that like in the movie Beat Street, the character Ramo, who's like the main graffiti character, he said, oh, this graffiti stuff was easy because I was just into comics, tracing comics and stuff. So like as you
know, that
was
the
like,
dialogue from the movie.
Yeah.
And you remember that.
Yeah, for sure. And and of course I remember that.
Yeah,
I mean, it was
yeah.
like super monumental moments at the time. And then so immediately it just related to me because I like already was interested in it. And then in the movie, he's like, oh, I draw comics. So yeah, I just, this was a natural, you know, and then it was like, oh, Yeah, you draw, you know, and, you know, all the crime side of, you know, the criminal part of it apart, you know, it was just like, oh, I immediately found a, like, a relationship with, like, oh, I draw comics. He drew comics. Then he did graffiti. Oh, I could do that too, you know.
Did you have, how'd you come up with your name and everything?
Well, the name, the graffiti names and stuff, they changed a lot for many years. And then finally, like, many years later, you know, a good friend of mine that I met who was quite a lot older than me, he realized sort of, I don't want to just say like, you know, he kind of handed me my name based on my characteristics. Oh, you're so always doing this stuff.
So write that.
Yeah. And that,
so did, were you riding up in the bay?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Heavily. Yeah.
Were you in a crew? Were you solo, kind of a street artist?
I was kind of solo. I had a lot of partners for many years. That was kind of how I rolled. Like, I would have the one guy that I did lots of spots with, and we did a lot, you know, there was a lot of guys like that over the years. And, but that's the one thing you realize pretty quickly when you're doing graffiti is that, like, you know, if you don't have a crew, you can run into a lot of problems, which at the time I was just like kind of, you know, whatever about it. I just want, for me, I was never in it for like anything other than the art, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But and, there are beefs, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of beefs stuff, right? And, you know, and you don't, you know, people recognize who's powerful and who's not. I mean,
How does that usually work? Like, because I don't write or anything, but I've known just the homies locally. Like, I'm not going to say their names or anything, but it seems like it's like a world unto itself. Like, it's like this underbelly of, it's like
yeah,
this
I mean,
microcosm
it's,
of a different world.
It's a
world.
Little, like, bit of, there's a structure to it for sure.
There
and
is.
Like,
how does that work? Like, if you get up, like, getting up is, like, if you're seen a lot then?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, originally if you're starting from the, you know, the ground up, you're just writing a name or something to get recognition and all these different things. And as you start to maybe gain recognition, maybe you start to become more of a target or something.
Is it because of jealousy?
I think probably.
Because
I mean, there's a little of that.
There's
just a little bit of that game. I mean, I don't think like graffiti is any different from any other thing, you know? I mean, it's a little bit more literal because you write your name on the wall, some other guy comes, crosses it out. I mean, it's very much like...
It's kind of like, it's like the hip-hop culture, right? Yeah. It's kind of like one B-boy against another B-boy.
For sure.
It's like challenging the other guy or whatever.
I would say, yeah. I mean, it's one of the elements of hip-hop.
Yeah.
But,
so, how did you learn, how did you learn the different kinds of, what kinds of pens to get or what were the most effective things that, like
I mean, over time, you just run into other guys and they tell you, oh, this is good or whatever. And
I always wondered that.
For me, I was always like kind of, I don't know, for like a lot of parts of my life with whether it was skating, graffiti or art, I've always sort of like run into really great mentor type of people that would be like, oh, hey, kid,
do this or do that.
And like, you know, like, I don't know how that works actually, but, you know, I've always been fortunate in that regard that like, you know, because I think that's what it comes down to. But, you know, things are very different nowadays because, you know, when I was coming up with, you know, skateboarding or graffiti, it's like, you didn't even know what tricks were on a skateboard, or maybe you didn't know even what a good tag even looked like or a good throw up or anything. So, you know, coming up with that, you were just like left to your own devices. Now it's like,
it's on it. People have their own Instagram, like graffiti
Instagrams. If a kid wants to write graffiti now and he's 10 years old, he can go online and just find out a good hand style right off the bat or whatever.
Yeah. So it's way different.
But I think it goes back to what you were talking about earlier too, with just skating in general, is that like, you know, you immediately see what's good. So you can copy off of what is
what
the
you
best
like about it. Yeah.
Whereas like back in the day, we had to like search to even find like what was going on.
Yeah. Even with videos, you'd have to wait years for the VHS tape to come out or whatnot.
But I also equate that like with music and stuff like that or whatever. It's like, you know, how did you find out about new music when you were growing up? You went to go see some band you liked.
Yeah.
And hopefully the opening bands would be like, oh, that was the new band. Yeah, or yeah, whatever. Yeah.
That's how I kind of like, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like with graffiti, like there's a rap group called The Artifacts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that kind of like, because they rapped about graffiti and all that. I know they're from like the East Coast, but I'm like, oh, these guys are like rappers, but they're all about just, they're talking about this, you know, aspect of it.
Sure. So for sure.
It kind of opened my eyes. So like, I was like, oh.
I remember like the Alcoholics were also into graffiti.
Oh, I'm a big fan of theirs. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I remember there was a lot of Bay Area. That was the thing with a lot of like Bay Area hip hop, like the, you know, Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
I'm a big dude. I'm a big fan. I'm a big Hyrule fan.
Souls of Mischief all those guys. Big fan. And then even like on the flip side, like Saphir.
Big fan of Boxcar. I love
Hobo
Saphir.
Junction.
Oh my
Hobo
God.
Hobo Junction.
Big fan.
Boom.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Boxcar Sessions, ladies and gentlemen, go cop that album. It's a banger. It's a hidden gem.
I don't know
it's
if your audience knows about it, but that is one of the.
So you guys look up Saphir, S-A-A-F-I-R. Saphir the Saucy Nomad. One of the best. I wish more people talked about him more.
Yeah, me too.
That guy,
absolutely.
Mean, if you want to talk about just like
and
this
legendary freestyle battles.
Oh my God, just
and all
his
stuff.
Style was unlike just the way he rapped and everything. People don't talk about him. I'm a dude, but I remember he was popping off on before the battle with Hyrule, but I was trying to figure out who he is. Then my homies got a tape of him, and I'm like, who's this guy? And then he ended up battling Casual, and then it was on the Wake Up Show.
Yeah.
And then that was the tape that everyone was seeking. They're like, oh, dude, it was on the radio, and it's going to be on the radio. They're battling hieroglyphics and all that. But
And he embarrasses them. He embarrasses them.
He should be bigger. I mean, credit to Hyrule. I'm a big fan of all of them. But I think Saphir should still be around as well.
For sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, and he was affiliated with some like graffiti writers in Oakland.
He's from the Bay,
like,
right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Or?
Oakland.
Yeah. Oakland. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oakland. Yeah. That was like 94. That was like in the 90s, early 90s.
And like, you know, like some really like some guys I really looked up to from Oakland graffiti writers. Mm-hmm. They're kind
of
like,
have you heard of Top Ramen?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Topper. Hell
yeah.
He's
Topper,
a friend.
Dude.
He's a friend.
Okay, I got a story about them. he was from, when I was in Arizona, I went to this rap show with Hieroglyphics Living Legends, and then there's a local crew called Supermarket. There's local, because I went to school in Arizona, in Tempe, Arizona State.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a local hip hop scene in Arizona at the time when I was going to school there. But there's a, you know, we were there, and then I always look out for the openers. Because I already know, I'm like, I already know what those,
right.
I knew about Hyrule and Living Legends. But the third act, it was this big white guy with the cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I see this guy and I'm thinking, Bryce, I'm thinking, what is this guy do country music? What the fuck? What is going on? And you know, there's
a freestyle king. Yeah, he's a freestyle king.
I know. I'm going
to
get to that.
He's a freestyle king.
And there's African-American dude, like dreads, Safari. Safari,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then who's the other guy? Boat.
Boack.
Is it?
Boack.
Yeah, okay.
B-O-A-C.
So, okay, so another white guy, Boack. So there's a big white guy with a cowboy hat, and then they're walking down, they're walking out, and then they come out with the Star Wars, dun, 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 and then I'm like, okay, this is something special. And then I think they started off with just freestyling, you know, and then they're rapping super fast and like freestyling. And I'm like, okay, this is, and then I remember they're giving out stickers, and I remember the sticker. It was a circle with the pencil, but it was like all like
twisted up,
like
a pretzel,
yeah, it was like a pretzel
with a knot in it,
knotted pencil.
Absolutely.
You remember that? Yeah, and I remember I went to the front row, and I just wanted, because they're like my favorite. I was like, okay, these guys are awesome, and then I just grabbed a sticker because.
Yeah, Top Ramen,
man.
A legend. He's a legend in SF, and he was also a really, really prominent graffiti writer in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I'm a fan, dude.
Freestyle King, Freestyle King.
I took notice to that, man. They were unbelievable. I liked them better than the other acts.
Yeah.
I was like, these guys are... And then their name, Earthlings.
Yeah.
I was tripping out that night in my dorm room, like, oh my God, how did they come up with that name? That's amazing. Yeah. Have you heard of these guys? Dude, look them up, man. But I'm a fan of that. Yeah, yeah. That's why I like that I especially like that because you can never judge a book by its cover, but when you see it, it goes to show.
I also think too, you have a practice. You do it. So
but I didn't do it. I kind of did it, but they really influenced me. Like groups like that, I'm like, oh my God, this is what the art's about. What they did on stage, it blew my mind. Yeah. But God, they should be around. I wish they were around.
Yeah, I haven't caught up with them recently, yeah. To be honest. I mean, I lived in San Francisco for 17 years, mm-hmm. and I've been here now for about almost five. But for me, like with San Francisco and LA, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. like, you know, for many years it was like thinking about maybe moving to the East Coast, but mm-hmm. for me, I was like, I love the West Coast. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to me, to leave SF, I was also going to be leaving LA, because all the time I lived in SF, I was always coming here, because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't understand how like easy that is. Like, just, you know, especially like, you know, 10 years ago, you could rent cars. They were super cheap.
Just
jump on the five,
mm-hmm. boom.
You know, smoking a joint,
and you're there.
Your car, boom, mm-hmm. you're here, and like vice versa. So like I've had a huge relationship with LA since 2002 was one That's of the first awesome. Times I had an art show here.
Yeah, let's talk LA. About that. Yeah, when did you were like, how did you get the art show? Like, when did you start getting your own shows or developing your style? You got like a lot of colors going on with your style as well, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, a lot of like really basically how I started becoming like doing gallery shows and mm-hmm. stuff like that was really like very organically grew from doing graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to do a lot of like more like legitimate mural kind of work in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, some of the first murals I did in San Francisco, I was just sort of, you know, like, to be perfectly honest with you, is like I went to San Francisco. I wanted to do like a lot of graffiti in like the most traditional sense, like mm-hmm. just writing a name. I was also there to skateboard, but mm-hmm. like you
like EMB and stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that around? That was around.
I caught the tail end of like mm-hmm, EMB. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. actually, it was kind of over. Pier 7 had already started, mm-hmm. but like people were coming back to EMB. But more importantly, I came in on the tail end of like the Union Square kind of scene.
Right.
And got to skate there a lot. And the thing in San Francisco too, especially in the like late 90s and probably still to this day, but like you get in with the skateboarders and like a lot of the skateboarders were also graffiti writers. So the two things were like sort of intertwined. So for me, like showing up there was just like, oh, like mm-hmm. finally home or whatever.
Yeah.
But also, you know, just to get there and like sort of get to go to all these spots that you've seen, and also just graffiti wise, like, you know, some of my most favorite graffiti writers, that's where they were doing their things at the time. Yeah, so getting to see that, it was all just like super inspirational. So
weren't they like even tagging on their grip tape, or they had a lot of them like did art on their grip tape as well?
Some people did. You know, like to me, that for me, like when with graffiti, I was always very secretive, so I never wanted anybody to know what I was doing.
So you separated it?
Yeah, I definitely separated it.
That's a good way to be.
That's actually a good thing that you just pointed out. Like,
yeah.
Because I never, when I transitioned from being like graffiti to like doing art, I never sort of rode like a graffiti name into it. Whereas a lot of people,
your own way,
a lot of people did that, but I did that totally out of like a utilitarian reason, which was like I didn't want to get busted by the police.
Right.
You know, nowadays it's like it's a lot different. And so like that's the thing, the also thing I'm just like sort of pointing out is like when I first started trying to like, oh, I'm doing art, I'm doing these things, there were like no real venues to even do this in the late 90s in San Francisco.
You mean to have your own show, like
to do a show. So it was like, you know, we were, you know, a lot of the skateboard culture, that's kind of what helped me become like an artist and become like what I am today is mm-hmm. because I just had that DIY spirit. Like, oh, no gallery wants to show me, I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no skate park, I'm going to go skate this or I'm going to go do that. And that's like, you know, something I love that idea now is that like what we have as skateboarders is just sort of that spirit of like, oh, this is a bench, but I'm going to skate it. Or like, that's just on a very simple level. Yeah. But like, you know, you, you look outside the normal box and like, no one's going to stop you. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you got that spirit too.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, this is what the show's like. We're not in a studio or this is my apartment. Yeah. So, you know, we're,
I thought when I watched some of your other episodes that maybe this was a studio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I'm
on your tip. I'm trying to be incognito. It's like, it's a mirage. It's a, it's an illusion. So no, but no,
there's
we
no
are.
No way. Yes.
I'm just letting the viewers, we are in a studio. We are in a studio. So we're, going back to, San Francisco Bay Area skateboarding, like back then, have you heard of FTC?
Of course. Yeah. Good friends.
My cousin Eddie, I just want to give a shout out to my cousin Eddie. He ran, the one in Sacramento. It's no longer there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I remember, just visiting the FTC in SAC and like really being proud of him and being like, wow, this is, cause you know, it had like all the signed decks from like all of the, you know, like all of,
Javonte's deck. Those are dear friends of mine. Kent Uhara is a good friend.
Yeah.
Ian Johnson has also like been there forever. Ando.
So do you, have you heard of Eddie? Eddie's my cousin.
I haven't heard of him, but I was at that shop in the SAC? Early 2000s. Yeah.
But I just want to shout that out because FTC, that's like, it's talking about what you're talking about.
Yeah, and Sacramento, they have such a great skate scene there. Mm-hmm. It's such a weird little town, you know?
Did you ever skate? It was like at this, it was kind of shaped like an ice rink. It was like under this airplane hangar thing.
I think that might still be there.
It was kind of like a do-it-yourself. They had like wooden ramps and
I think they actually turned it into like something proper.
Oh, okay. Because I remember you'd have to pay like
Matt Pales. Can you tell us?
Yeah. But do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That was kind of near the FTC.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people.
Yeah.
Living there, still skating.
That's cool.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
It's a super.
That's
awesome
so cool
scene.
That you're still skateboarding. A lot of people quit, man. You know what I mean? Like, and especially a lot of people quit like in their early 30s or whatever. And it's like you're like, you know, past that and you're still, and it seems like you still have your skills are still up there. Like you're popping stuff high, and still riding that piece of wood.
trying it. Yeah. Trying to. Yeah.
Your first art show, like let's talk about like when you start transitioning into like your, like, now your professional art career, like how it's at now as far as,
well, yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't want to get into writing a 10-page or 10-chapter book about it, but I think to just keep it really basic, like, so what I was saying earlier, like, was doing a lot of graffiti, just whatever, your standard illegal graffiti, rooftops and stuff like that, and really, like, moving to San Francisco was kind of like an awakening for me politically as well, just you move to a city like that, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, wow, you could be, like, community active. You can be involved in all these things, and it actually, like, matters. Because, like, San Francisco's, like, got a pretty, I guess, original thing there in that, like, it is, like, this sort of big city, but it's also small. Like, the community's small. Everybody knows each other politically in the art community or whatever, and so it's like when you get involved there in different aspects of, like, say a community project or a nonprofit arts organization, or you can get involved in like your local politics or help different campaigns or whatever, like, you can immediately see this huge effect. So, like, for me, that was like pretty groundbreaking or just ground earth shaking for me. And so one of the things I was really interested in when I moved there was this place called the Clarion Alley Mural Project.
Where was that located?
And it's in the Mission District. It's basically between 17th and 18th and Valencia Street, which is kind of just like the epicenter of San Francisco now. And you know, basically it was like a mural project, and it was a lot of murals being painted there in the 90s were just very different than your what you would expect, like, from a mural. It was, like, very avant-garde, very contemporary stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in this. And so basically I started to, I was going through there a lot, and, like, you know, it's just there. It's, like, very high traffic zone, and it's where all the bars and all that mm-hmm. stuff is, and whatever. You go through there going to skate spots or whatever. And so my goal was to just do a mural there. And so I, like, contacted they would run this block party every year and be punk bands and stuff playing.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it's still going on to this day. And I found out who was running the project, a guy named Aaron Noble, who actually lives here in LA now. Oh, but crazy. But I contacted him about, because I was kind of just like, if I can just do a mural in this alley or whatever. And that's kind of how it started.
I like that.
Yeah, it was cool.
It started with the mural. You just want to do a mural.
I just wanted to do a mural. Yeah, dude. And that was kind of that actually, to make a long story short, was kind of the idea, is that, like, I just wanted to paint murals and do things. I wasn't even really thinking about, like, am I going to be in a gallery? How do I make money?
That wasn't even in your head.
Or all this stuff. It wasn't even really part of the whole idea.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, basically just did that mural, led to some other murals, and then immediately, like, I started to be contacted by, like, galleries and stuff. This is around 2001.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I respect that, man. Because you had the right, I mean, from my opinion, you had the right intention to begin with.
For sure.
Because it should just be about that, right?
Right.
Like, I just want to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I had, like, I saw things that I didn't like going on in the city.
Which is
and
fine.
I was like, oh, I can address these things in these murals or whatever. And then, like, you know, different types of gallery opportunities, just to take it a couple steps forward, it's kind of like in the last, you know, like, there's all a lot of stuff going on these days that are, you know, and I don't hate on anything. I mean, everything that's going on is awesome. Just kids pushing things forward and whatever, like, more power to them, you know. But, like, for me, it was like, I never had, like, motivations for anything, but nowadays I just see different kids who are like, first I'm going to go out on the street and then I'm going to put up posters, and then I'm going to put them up around these galleries that I like, and then I'm going to,
there's a
you
term
know,
for that, isn't it called, like, clout chasing?
Yeah. Or just like, you know,
I heard that from the Tekashi 6ix9ine news. They're called Do you see my girl's eyes roll? Once I said that, I wish the camera was on my girlfriend. She rolled her eyes like, give me a break.
But, you know, like, having a sort of having like an agenda, like, oh, I'm going to do these things in hopes that I end up in this white cube or whatever.
For the result. For the result.
Yeah.
Opposed to, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
Just to do it.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, there's a mentality of that, I think, that's, like, really, I don't know so much to this day, but I think, especially in the late 90s and early 2000s and whatever, like, in San Francisco, that was, like, a very prevalent mentality. Mm-hmm. Like, people just wanted to
just do cool things. Yeah.
Like, oh, I have this awesome band, and they just play in some warehouse or whatever. No, you know. And of course, like, you know, you get a little older, you got to figure out ways to pay the bills, so on and so forth.
Can you make that distinction or the similarity to skateboarding, as far as, like, the kid that just wants to skate the parking lot of Albertsons or Ralph's?
For sure.
Opposed to, like, you know what, I want to do Street League, then I'm going to get picked up by this company.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to skate for Active, and then I'm going to skate for Nike, and then it's like, it's crazy.
For sure.
It's kind of, it's similar, right? Wouldn't you say? Opposed to, like, no, you know what, I feel like skating this bench right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I want to do right now.
Or just, yeah, I mean, just thinking about some type of being strategic, I guess. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like, I feel it, because it's like,
well,
you know,
I have an
Instagram account,
or
whatever. You, like, do your thing, you put yourself out there in different types of ways. But I think, like, you know, we're pretty lucky in that we're, like, kind of one of the last generations that got to experience it all.
Yeah.
You know, I have a 6-year-old son, and, like, he's never gonna know what it was like to not have a iPhone or, you know, every minute of his life's been being recorded.
Yeah, dude.
Since he was like, you know,
crazy.
Born.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, back then when we're growing up, it's like the dude with the beeper was like the man, you know, you'd be like, oh, damn, he's got a beeper. And then you beep and then he'd go to 7-Eleven and he would be like, you know, but it's like it's a trip now. Like these kids, when they're like little kids, there's iPad kids games. They're like, they know what to push and it's kind of scary.
Yeah,
dude.
I'll tell you a quick story. That's really crazy. Okay. Is like my kid is in kindergarten right now. And me and my wife, we just went for the first, review or teacher's conference, mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we go in there and we find out my son, he's doing really well.
What grade is he in?
He's kindergarten.
Oh, kindergarten. Okay.
So, but they're very progressive these days.
I'm sure they are.
You'd just be surprised. I mean,
they're advanced.
He's in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. He's reading and he's doing all this stuff. Like, I don't remember really learning how to read till first grade.
Picking my boogers,
you know.
Yeah.
Like, but anyway, you know, whatever, you have a kid, you're always thinking, oh, I'm going to go in here. There's going to be something maybe he's not doing. Mm-hmm. And teacher's, oh, no, he's doing great, blah, 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 blah. But then to the flip side, she wants to explain, oh, you know, so some of the kids come in here and they're doing this because, you know, they'll go, oh, his grade is this, but they want you to know, oh, well, this is a 1, this is a 2, this is a 3, this is a 4, which is strange, you know. They're trying to figure out if your kid's ready to go to first grade or not.
Right.
But to make a long story short, the teacher actually said that some of the kids in there, they don't even know how to turn a page in a book, and that they look at a book and they try to swipe at it. Like it's an iPad.
Oh my God.
I'm not even joking.
Dude, it's like we're going to be in the cyborg generation soon, dude. You know, that scares me.
Yeah.
God, you just gave me a scary visual of a kid like doing that. Oh, what do you guys think about that? Isn't that scary?
He already heard the story.
It's messed up.
The day after I heard this, I was so happy that my kid was doing great.
Yeah.
I was just like so alarmed that this was the state of affairs. But really, it's not that surprising, you know. But
so what are your thoughts on like the advancement of technologies and like the future of that as far as like where we're headed? Or whatnot.
I mean, are we going to really get into a AI discussion?
No, we don't. No, I don't know. We don't have that much more time now. But just give me. No, we don't have to do conspiracy. They know. No, because I saw Elon Musk on Rogan saying it scared me. You know, before they smoked the blunt or whatever. But I was like, oh man, he was like, it could be. You know, it could be the end of humans or whatever. You know, if the robots or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's headed in that direction.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I've started to have anxiety problems over the last couple of years, so I'd rather not think about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? I'm happy that, you know, it started with a mural that you just want to do, and then now, like, you're doing shows, and
that wasn't
your intent, but you're...
I can't honestly say I didn't want to become, like, something. I mean, I was just, like, going through the motions of following more, like, my passion, like... And,
opposed to the results, like how we were talking about earlier, like, I just want to do this because this will equate to this, you know what
I mean? I guess at the time I feel fortunate that I was able to sort of not care too much, you know, like I'm fortunate that I have parents that really supported what I was doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, all the stuff I put them through, they believed in me, and I managed to be lucky when I moved to San Francisco and got myself, at least for the first couple of years, I was in a really cheap living situation. So I didn't have to make like decisions about like, oh, I need to make money or whatever. Yeah. Like, and you know, so it's like, I'm never trying to be like, oh, who cares? Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I know there's like real life things that people you have to think about.
Yeah.
And
so going back to your first show, when did you learn? Did you sell like pieces your first show? Like, when did you start like selling your own art? Like, to make income and stuff?
I mean, when I first did some of the first murals, some of the like really cool really cool gallery and arts organization in San Francisco, like, kind of immediately took notice, and they're called the Luggage Store Gallery, cool. Still there to this
That's
day.
What's up. Hell yeah.
I mean, they're like pretty much one of the first gallery that gave like Barry McGee like a first show,
and
Margaret Kilgallen. I mean, they were really paved the way in San Francisco for a lot of things. I mean, I can't give enough love and respect up to Daryl and Lori from the Luggage Store Gallery.
Shout out to Daryl and Lori for
509 Cultural Center.
Shout out to them for, you know, giving artists, you know, a shot.
But yeah. I mean, they've done phenomenal things, mm-hmm. and they've continued to do phenomenal things. I mean, they just produced a gigantic mural on Market Street in San Francisco.
That's what's up, yeah.
On 7th and Market by mm-hmm. Alicia McCarthy, another huge influence mm-hmm, mm-hmm. artist that really has, you know, she's like kind of a pioneer of San Francisco, mm-hmm. and really like she's done a lot of things for me over the years, and
that's
huge
cool.
influence. Yeah. But yeah, so they took notice of like the things I was doing and sort of gave me this opportunity to just, they had an apartment at the time on Haight Street with these windows that they would let. Not, they had a gallery, but I don't think I was ready for the full gallery type of thing. But they let me put paintings in the windows of their house on Haight Street because they would let younger artists do installations in the windows of their house.
And people took notice of that?
Yeah, and then people took notice of that. And then my first show is actually in a cafe on Haight Street at Haight and Fillmore,
cool.
called the Cafe International. Which
How many pieces do you have in there?
I had like 20 in there, but like sold them all.
You
I mean,
sold
they
them
were
all,
like,
dude?
Yeah, and like that was
what?
The thing. It was like I was doing kind of shows at these weird spots.
Yeah,
and
that's
then I,
cool.
You know, I was making things happen for myself, and that was around the year 2000-ish.
How did that make you feel when you like, were you surprised you were like,
It gave me confidence, you know.
But were you like just tripping, like, oh my God, they bought it? Or,
yeah, I mean, it gave me like, that was really cool. I mean, it gave me the confidence to keep going forward, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, I think that's like a really important thing for young artists is that
confidence.
You have that confidence to just keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And like for me at the time, it was like, you know, unfortunately in this day and age, it's like, money talks in a lot of ways. It's like, oh, some guy was willing, you know. And at the time, like, you know, I was selling work for a couple $100 or even $100.
That was cool at the time, though, wasn't it?
Oh yeah,
that's a good
chunk
of change for that. Come on,
for sure.
That must have made you feel good, dude. Come on,
it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was awesome. So but like to sell like, you know, a couple grand worth of stuff out of some cafe, and you're like, oh,
wait, a couple grand?
Yeah.
Oh,
but then
a couple grand. All right, that's great. You know what? More power to you. I love that.
But
yeah, we just went to art show, and it's like I was like, you know, 2,000, 2,500. You know, I'm like, we're breaking down the math. I'm like, they sell one of these, they got rent that month.
Yeah.
Right, babe. So, man,
it's
I love
true.
That. I love hearing those.
Yeah,
kinda,
and
it,
you know, like I said
stories.
At the time,
yeah.
It was like confidence for me. Like, because, you know, you're like, you know, because I always say this as well with like the whole like art trip. It's like, I'm glad I don't know what I know now then.
Why?
Because I would have never tried to pursue this as a career.
Really? So, since
kind of.
With that being said, there might be some young artists watching this. Can you give them just
No,
three?
I mean, I gotta backtrack because I'm just more talking emotionally
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
it's just so hard. And like, and there's so many things that go into being an artist and mm-hmm. more importantly, you know, being able to have a career and make money and be able to like actually make it work for you. You know, there's so much that goes into it. And like, all I guess I was saying more is if I knew like the roller coaster ride I was getting on, I probably would have had less. I would have had a lot more reservations about moving forward.
Yeah,
because it's so tough.
What are the top three qualities these young artists coming up need in today's market? Just three, whatever comes to mind. Yeah,
that's easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, first off, I would just say hard work.
Hard work.
A lot of artists don't understand that, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's like the, you know, keep working, 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 working. Right when you think you work so hard that you can't work anymore, that's you're at ground zero. You know, then you need to keep working.
Wait, you're still at ground zero.
Yeah. I mean, you got to, I mean, I really, I'm just saying, like, all things aside, like, some young artists might have luck. They might know the right person, all these different things. And all those things help as well. But I would say, like, out of anything, just to be
hard work,
to show up and work, like, and, you know, that was the thing for me. It's like all I did
for years, forever. years.
And,
What about number two?
I mean, number two, I would say would be to not become formulaic. And I always
Give me an example of that. Like, what do you mean?
So,
like,
to draw to the put same it thing? Into like a good context, maybe. And I hope your viewers are familiar with like the Beastie Boys. But
I hope so too.
But like,
I love the Beastie Boys.
But you know, then you can understand. Like, you had like the first record came out, License to Ill. And you're like, oh,
dude,
everybody's
Paul's
going crazy.
One of my favorite albums.
And then Paul's Boutique,
dude.
Paul's Boutique. Mm. You're like, oh, they're getting
masterpiece.
Weird.
Masterpiece.
They're getting weird.
Dust
they're doing
Shout
all
to
this
the
weird
Dust
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes Check Your Head. And you're like, wow, they fine-tuned everything, mm-hmm. right?
But then Ill Communication.
I'm just going to say, Ill Communication's good, but mm-hmm. I feel like after Check Your Head, all of a sudden it was like,
oh, Hello Nasty.
They realized like all the little things that the fans really liked. Oh, they really like it when we, plug the bass amp into the mic and blah, 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 like all these things. And so, you know, like the experiment, I'm not saying I don't like everything after Check Your Head. I love everything the mm-hmm. Beastie Boys ever did. But what I'm saying is like those first three records, you could really feel the experimentation
going on
and like all the different things they were like really trying out and doing. Mm-hmm. And then after that point, it was like they figured it out and then they just knew how to make, you know, whatever you want to mm-hmm. say, great songs. But for me, I think as an artist and trying to stay true to that, it's mm-hmm. like really about continuing the experimentation, continuing the moving forward, continuing to,
challenge yourself.
Yourself and not just like create the same hit song
over and over. Oh, that's what you mean by that.
That's what I'm talking about.
So two kids experiment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep experimenting. Try new things.
Absolutely.
Dude, I love
that.
I
would say that.
Yeah. Number three. And then we'll bring it all together. Yeah, yeah.
Number three would maybe become like something I never actually did because it kind of would go against number one. But I also think you need to be doing a lot of other things besides just art.
Oh.
So like, for example, like it's very easy to just like brain into this thing. And it's like something I almost wish someone told me, but like, you know, there are many years where this is the only thing I thought of. I didn't think of my family. I didn't think of so
anything else?
Like,
but you had skateboarding,
I had skateboarding,
yeah,
but to be honest with you too, that like kind of took a backseat for many years.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then,
yeah.
You know, that came back to it, but it's not just about skateboarding. It's about your family. It's about the ones you love around you.
Yeah.
It's about all these things, because like when you're on that mission to like, you know, accomplish this thing you're trying to accomplish, it's sometimes it can be a very selfish and egotistical, adventure. And I guess the third thing I'm saying is just to like really balance everything and don't forget like, you know, the loved ones and don't forget that, you know, life is fragile at the same time. And so like, you don't, you know, when you're younger, it's easy to think that like you have like this unlimited amount of time,
but you don't
to just do whatever, but like, you know, or like maybe even the people around you don't have unlimited time. So, for me, all I'm saying is just to make sure that you keep track of everything, not just not just get on that, you know, put the horse blinders
on.
And
dude, that was some great advice. Let's review. So hard work, right? Experiment, right? but then you also need balance in your life. So, because you never know, kids hit me up Instagram saying, "Hey, get more artists on. I really like the artists." So, I mean,
yeah,
there'll be some, you know, young up and coming artists watching this right now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How we doing on time, Bryce?
Yeah, we're getting close.
What's the time? Because we still have packages or whatnot. 55, we're doing good. Is there anything that you wanted to, I like to end it with just plugging your, just all your social, or like if you have an art show coming up or whatnot, to let the viewers know when that is, or what's your Instagram, first of all? It's
Instagram is at A Schultz, at A-S-C-H-O-U-L-T-Z.
Yeah, Schultz is S-C-H-O-U-L-T-Z.
Yeah.
Yeah, Schultz.
So at A Schultz.
At A Schultz.
Right.
Okay, and then no Twitter, and then no.
Yeah. And Facebook's useless.
Yeah. I haven't been on there forever. So A Schultz. What about your? I noticed you have a website as well.
Yeah, that's just andrewschultz.com.
So andrewschultz.com.
Right.
Okay.
And I think the good old Google search, you'll find out enough information.
And then do you have an upcoming show that
I'm working on several things right now. I'm going to be doing a show in Hong Kong for Art Basel in next March. That's one thing I'm working on.
Yeah.
I just closed a show in New York that actually just closed this Saturday, but I actually curated a show that is still up till the end of the year in Germany at a gallery called Gallery Drost.
Dang.
And there's a lot of great artists in that show. Ed Templeton, wow. James Jean.
Yeah, Lee James was on here.
Yeah.
He actually recommended you. Right?
He's a good dude.
Yeah, James recommended you.
Thanks, James. Yeah. Shout out James Jean.
Watch his episode too, guys. Jeez, watch James's thing, man. James did that for the band.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He's really good, huh, too, as well?
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's detailed.
He's amazing.
Huh?
He's killing it.
I mean, that's
killing it.
Yeah, he probably embodies the stuff you're talking about. Yeah,
absolutely. Because
he has a kid now, too, as
well.
Yeah. So he has to balance it, too, as well.
For sure.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Yeah.
And shout out to Money Mark from the BC Boys. I want a part two of Money Mark on here. So I want Money to come on here because he didn't really talk about. You kind of like the light bulb went off because I want to know more of the history of when how he was involved with the Beasties, because he was there to check their head and all
absolutely.
That, you know, from here to Gardena, you know, they give little shout outs to Mark. So he I didn't tell you, Bryce, but Mark wants to come on here for part two. So we got to make that happen. Right.
That's awesome.
So shout out to you know, Mark actually let me borrow this sampler here. And then that the piano Mark gave me that.
Wow.
So that's so shout out to Mark for
piano sounds amazing.
Thanks, yeah. So that was his family piano. And then he gave me this he didn't give me this sampler, but he let me borrow this this 202.
That's awesome. Cuz
I'm working on my own like solo project as well.
Yeah, when his first instrumental record
dropped. The keyboard repair. Yeah. Oh, he's a genius, man. He really he's something else. So we want a part two with Mark, and this is the time where I have to give out shout outs too. Shout out to the new Patreons, Zachary Sadak, Epic Yum Yum, and Manny Mangibbon. Okay, so if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/stevieweeby and make that pledge. I do a weekly diary log every Monday. Are you enjoying them, Bryce?
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked about Red Dead Redemption. A lot of Red Dead Redemption talk. So go. That's a special thing for my patrons. I'm the new album's almost done. It's practically done. So it's going to be available at stevieweebybandcamp.com. All right, since you interrupted there, Bryce, the reason why, it's not the only reason, but Red Dead Redemption's really put we've been spending a lot of time in the wild, wild west, you know. Yeah. Running in the Driscoll gang and different gangs on there. The Murphy Brood gang. Follow the show on Instagram /QUANGOU. If you want to send stuff to the show, send it to the Stevie Weeby Show at 1425 North Cherokee Avenue, P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California, 90093. Thanks again, Andrew, for coming.
Hey, thanks for having
me. We
got to
do a part two in the future, brother. And, so this at this point, we like to open up these packages. So I have to guess.
Take some photos.
I have to guess what's in here. And then this is from. Can you read that? See, what does that say? See.
Sea hands.
Sea hands.
Sea hands.
Okay, sea hands. So I'm going to.
Minnesota?
Yes. Yeah, so sea hands from Maple Grove, Minnesota. I feel like there's going to be like clothes or something in here. Hopefully socks, huh?
Looks heavy.
So I think there is clothes. I kind of cheated. But there's a letter in here, huh?
Ooh,
can you read that, Andrew? Like, I like to have my guests read it.
It says, Stevie Weeby, thanks for all the free content from your podcast. Your interview style is unique and super entertaining to watch between comedians, porn stars, rappers, and artists. I've been following you since DVD Asa, and you're definitely the funnier oil brother. I still remember when your brother twisted my nipples at the Hollywood Improv when I first moved to LA and helped Sam Tripoli with the Naughty Show. If Sam gets on the podcast again, you should ask him about that show. The content between DVD Asa, Tiger Belly, and the Stevie Weeby has gotten me through homelessness twice and a lot of ups and way more downs over the last few years. To thank you all for all that you do, I wanted to give you and everyone that's helped you along the way some of my free art that I've been giving away for the last few years. I still haven't set up an online store, so there's nothing to promote. But feel free to do whatever you want with these shirts. Hand them out, hoard them, whatever. Okay. They're yours to do as you wish. Thanks again, Stevie. Mm-hmm. Keep up the great work. You've come a long way since the Red Zone days.
Mm-hmm. God bless you, brother. What's
thanks, C. C.
With S-E-E? Yep. Shout out to C from Maple Grove, Minnesota.
IG handle at Sawhung.
IG handle... Sawhung, S-A-W-H-U-N-G.
P.S. Sorry to hear about Fat Sal's. Heard about the car crash and destroyed the best sandwich shop in L.A.
I used to work there. So this is great stuff. You guys are coming home with a shirt. There's so many shirts in here. There's
not done.
What? No, I'm not done. It keeps coming. It keeps coming.
Those are hand-drawn?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they are.
Let me take a look, Andrew. They just keep coming, huh?
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Babe, you're going to wear these to work.
All of them.
All of them.
One for each day of the week. Put them all on, Steve.
No, all of them. There's so many. Oh, this is great. Look at the color. Babe, look at this. This is you.
I like that one.
Babe.
I think they are. I think they're hand-drawn.
It hit her in the face.
These are hand...
Oh, they are?
They're handmade.
Oh, babe, look. This is for you, too. Look.
Oh, that's pretty.
Babe.
Yeah, these are handmade,
okay.
Dude.
Thank you. So I'm going to put these, and then I'm going to hand them out at the end, right? You guys each get one, okay? So the next one is from... The next one's from my man, Nathaniel Odom. He keeps bringing in the love. Yeah, Nathaniel just keeps giving and giving and giving. Right? Look out for Losco Projects, okay? Look, go check out his podcast. He, my man right here interviews all skateboarders. From the Bay Area, from up north, yeah. Let me see here. No, I didn't. Oh, did I? Oh, no, I did.
It's up here.
Oh, jeez, it's up here. I'm sorry, Nathaniel. Oh, my God, I
you ripped the hedge off of
that. Okay. Thank you for the support. Enjoy these stickers. Much respect, Steve. Keep hustling. Nathaniel. AKA Losco Projects, right? .com. LOSKO, right? Losco Projects. Let's check it out. Oh, it's his podcast. LoscoProjects.com, right? Skateboard podcast.
Is that a bus? We don't even have official stickers.
Oh, I know. He's killing
it. You need stickers,
dude. I know I do. We need more than stickers, though, huh, Bryce? Yeah, in development. Yeah, we're getting there, huh? Maybe, shout out, 60,000, 60K, 60,000 subscribers, guys. Appreciate that. We're on our way, right, Bryce?
We are.
Now I'm nervous.
Okay.
Well, we already arrived, but yeah, we're also still on our way.
Now I'm nervous.
I wonder what this is. This feels like clothes too. This feels like a shirt.
You'll be getting those YouTube paychecks pretty soon.
Shout out to Douglas Connolly from Australia, South Australia.
Wow. Whoa. That's a far ways away. Have you ever been to Australia?
Yeah, when I was younger, I went on a tennis tour for Stone Ridge Country Club. I vaguely remember it. I just remember like I got beat 6-0 on a clay court by some kid. I never won a match. Okay. Oh, look. Oh, look at this. Wow, look at these. Stickers. Look at that, huh? Pemberton. What is this? Pemberton. They're just cool stickers. Wicked Sisters.
Can you tilt it towards the
Kitty Kisses.
There? Nice.
Okay. Wicked Sisters, We Suck. Okay. There's, what does that say? Horror, my friend? Horror, my friend. Okay, sorry. Horror, my friend. Another horror, my friend. And, Colorblind. Okay. Stickers. And it says right here, Instagram.com/library group records. Yeehaw! librarygrouprecords.com. So it's like a music label. Okay, there's a letter. I'll read this
one.
You
mind if I do a story?
Yeah, you know, go ahead. Hey, Steve, love the show. Thank you for introducing me to all these people you've had on and for staying on it. Shout out to George and Bryce.
Finally, Bryce
gets some recognition. In celebration of Collage of the Mirage, I've sent you some of my band's tapes after you wondered if people are still releasing those things. Hope you like it. It's some strange dream pop shoegaze from South Australia. Big love, Douglas. P.S. Dream Guest, Fat Lip, and Caro Caro Bonito. We could possibly make those happen in the future, right, guys? I just saw Fat Lip at Starbucks.
Well, we had a book. Really? Guys,
yeah.
Try again.
Huh?
You almost had it. We'll try again.
Caro Caro Bonito. We're on it. Right, babe?
Yep.
And Fat Lip, we're on it. We're going to try, okay?
Let's look at... Wow, look at this, huh? Okay, I love Kirby's anticipation. Kirby, it's not for you. It's not snacks. Ooh, there's a medium shirt. Oh, jeez.
Stuff. All the way from Oz.
Australia, too, huh?
All the way from Oz.
Look at this. It's,
tight.
I like this.
Awesome.
It says, join the Sad Punks Club, Best Wishes Records. And then it has this in the back. Draining. It's cool, right? Yeah, I'm definitely rocking that too as well.
Okay, is that it?
And then do you have tapes? Sorry, Kirby. Yeah, he just... Huh? I know, no, we'll keep going.
And then look at these tapes, man. Oh, this is album, Draining. The Dissonance.
More tapes? Steve, we need tapes for your album.
I know, I need to press up tapes. For Douglas, let me know where you got your tapes pressed up. I'm just curious. Because they turned out pretty cool, huh? Look.
Super cool.
Yeah. So people are still doing tapes. Do you guys have
lots
a tape?
People are doing tapes.
Yeah. They're coming back? Okay, and so I can't forget. Look at this. Look at that. Chevy Chase, dude.
Favorite movie.
You guys seen Fletch?
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's a great movie. Fletch. Fletch?
Yeah. So this is from
Will Star Columbus, Ohio. Okay?
Ohio. I wonder what this is. Let me see. Oh, shit. This is going to fall. Yeah, the whole thing's going to fall. Okay. We good? Okay. Jeez. Sorry, Bryce. God, they really taped the crap out of this one. Oh my God, look at this. Okay, okay. I'm guessing, you know, we've gotten so many shirts. I think it's a shirt again. It's my favorite. Come on, guy. Oh no, maybe it's not. You know what? What if one of these is poo one day? Someone just sends poo. That would be amazing. If someone just said... Oh, right when I said that, I thought I smelled something.
Careful, Steve.
I don't know. Yeah, you can edit that out. I don't want anyone to send poo. Okay, here we go. Whoa, what?
It does smell like something.
Union made hydrating body bar soap.
Yeah.
Babe, we got soap. It smells amazing. Smell it, Andrew. Union made.
Yeah.
We have a rock.
That's drift. Is that? Oh, wait. That's petrified wood, I think.
Yeah.
That's petrified wood.
I don't know. I'm going to read it. I love it. I don't know. I might need it for down there.
Yeah, this is petrified wood.
Dear Stevie Weeby, Merry Christmas. I love the show. I just started watching not too long ago and was going through your older episodes and heard you say that you like to smell soap. I too have this same passion in life. I believe I have found the greatest soap of all time and wanted to share it with you. Not only does it smell fantastic, but it lathers up and cleans your skin just as good. This is amazing. Also, I want to say thank you for inspiring me to start doing my own podcast called The Half-Ass Dad Podcast. Check out The Half-Ass Dad Podcast, guys. Keep an eye out for it. I have some pretty good creative ideas I want to experiment with and see how it goes. Love you, man. Shout out to Kirby and the white devils behind the cameras. I thought she called you a devil. I'm sorry. Oh, come on. It's good spirited. Love always, Power Pounder 666. P.S. I threw in a moon rock. It's a moon rock. I threw in a moon rock as well, a.k.a. petrified wood. You're right.
It was right.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Thank you so much. This was amazing. All right. With that being said,
you know how petrified wood's made, right?
No. Explain it real quick, and then
we'll... Blows up, and then the volcanic stuff goes over everything, and then trees and wood that are...
Oh, so this is... Happens. We'll put this by the rocks over there, huh, babe?
Yeah.
Okay, with that being said, Andrew, that was a blast, dude. Yeah, I'm looking forward to
thanks.
It. Oh, this is going to drop next week, by the way. So, Low Raise World, it's going to be next week. We love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. 60K.